Today is a topic that actually emerged. My colleague who taught at Hadar for a long time, Rabbi Jason Rubenstein, who's now the Jewish chaplain at Yale, was asking me about what is the earliest source about the dipping or the dipping of the wine, the pouring out of the wine around the 10 plagues. And it made me sort of want to explore a little bit more, what is our relationship with the Egyptians on Seder night? So I'm going to explore that through the history of the custom of dipping out or pouring out the wine. And also we'll end with an amazing midrash, which is the inverse of the story of the Exodus from Egypt told from Haman's perspective, who, when constructing his case against the Jews, retells the story of the Egyptian narrative from his perspective and Pharaoh's perspective. So we'll end with that amazing midrash. But we're gonna take a look at the ways in which the custom of spilling out or dipping your finger into the wine and taking some of it out has developed, and how that sort of demonstrates what our relationship is with the Egyptians, what is our relationship with the oppressor, to take it more broadly. And I want to credit, there's an Israeli scholar named Tzvi Roan, who did a lot of work on this, has an amazing article about it in the journal Hakira. You can probably find it online. It was sent to me by Josh Culp. Josh Culp is the author, co-author of the Schechter Haggadah. I've done a lot of work on the history of the Haggadah. And when I looked at his section on the spilling out of the wine, he quoted a tradition from Abarbanel, in the Middle Ages, claiming that this was something that is meant to fulfill the verse, we should not rejoice in the downfall of our enemies. And I asked him, what's the source for that? And he wrote me back, he said, well, actually, I might have missed on that one. I might have just relied on secondary sources, and I don't have that source for you. And when you look into the history of this, you'll see that there was this idea of spilling out some of the wine to mitigate our joy because of the suffering of the Egyptians was attributed to Abarbanel, also attributed to Abu Draham, two scholars that start Aleph Bet. And Carla just said that the Torah.com just did a layperson's version of the article he wrote for Hakira. So you can see it there as well. But neither Abu Draham nor Abarbanel are actually saying anything about spilling the wine. So we're going to see how this developed and what it might say about our own relationship to the Egyptians. So this is the story of spilling out the wine begins with Hasidei Ashkenaz. These are the German pietists, in the 12th century, who were devising a whole range of esoteric explanations for prayers and rituals. They are the people who were sort of the earliest people counting letters and words in the Siddur as a way of saying, this is the liturgy that we have is the only liturgy we could ever have. And if you even change one letter of it, even if the meaning stays the same, the counting changes, and that's going to ruin everything about what we're doing when we pray or when we do a ritual. One of the most famous members of this chug, of this circle, is the Rokeach, Rabbi Elazar of Worms. And he wrote a commentary on the Siddur, wrote a commentary on the Haggadah. The first mention of spilling out wine actually comes from a text that was only published in 2006 by Simcha Emanuel, which is up on Otsar HaChokhma, which is his Drasha LePesach. And scholars actually didn't know about this until Emanuel published it. And so there was this idea that he invented or he was the first one to record spilling out the wine, but nobody knew where to find it until about 15 years ago. So I'm gonna bring you this text right now. We'll see what was his understanding of why we spill out the wine. So if you remember at the end of the midrash that we've been talking about, Doresh Me'ar Ami Oved Avi Ad She'Yigmor Kol HaParasha Kula, when you finish the drasha on this section that you're supposed to do a midrash on as the core of the Magid section, you mentioned the 10 plagues. And not only the 10 plagues, you also mention two other sets of sort of summaries of the plague, One is a quote elsewhere in the Tanakh, Dam Va'esh V'Timrot Ashan. Those are three sort of makot, three versions of plagues that were added to our list. And you also have the abbreviation of Rabbi Yehuda, who would give them a siman, Ditzach Adash Ba'achav, which is just the acronym of each of the 10 plagues. But this actually is a very old tradition. That's another three. So you've got the 10 plagues plus three, fire, blood, fire, and pillars of smoke. That's 13. And Ditzach Adash Ba'achav, which is just the acronym. That's another three. So you've got 16. 16 mentions of the plagues that you're doing at the end of the Midrash, at the end of the Magid section. And these are the 16 drops that you drop out for the plate according to the Rokeach. So he says, he lists these 16 mentions, and then he says it's 16 words, Yudvav Tevot. Al kol teva etzba yadam bakos hayayin umitifin lachutz. On each of these, you dip your finger into the cup, and you sprinkle it outside the cup. Minag abotenu kein. This is an old custom. V'chein hinhig Rabbeinu Elazar Gadol, that he lists a bunch of people in the German Pietist school who would do this, including his father. And now he's going to give you a lot of explanations of what the 16 is corresponding to. So what are the 16 corresponding to? One is the sword of God that has 16 sides. We'll see this is a midrashic tradition that reads a verse from Ezekiel, that reads a particular verse as saying that God's sword has 16 sides to it, and 16 times that the word dever, plague, is mentioned in Jeremiah, although Emmanuel counted it, looks like there's 17 times, but leave that aside. 16 times that dever is mentioned in Jeremiah. Lomar, lanu lo yazik. This is to say, you should not hurt us. It should not damage us. So there's some prophylactic move that you're doing. When you spill out the wine, what you're actually asking for is some form of protection from the vengeful sword of God, or protection from the dever, the plague of God. This might be something that has extra relevance this year, where you think about, you reduce a full cup as a way of, almost like a libation, as a way of saying, we cannot fully, you know, enjoy a full cup without taking some protections. It's almost like the evil eye taking some protections to ward off any punishment that might come from having an overly full cup. Okay, and they got a few other associations. There's 16 times that the word chayim comes in Psalm 119. Psalm 119 is the super long psalm, which is an alphabetical acrostic. Each letter gets 8 times in Psalm 119. So the word chayim, or some derivation, comes 16 times in that verse. So it's also giving us life. And the 16 people who read Torah each week, if you count up Shabbat plus Shabbat afternoon plus the weekday readings, 16 people reading Torah, and the 16 kvasim, the 16 sheep that you sacrifice every day, if you count up all the regular sacrifices, and also Eitz Chaim hi l'machazikim ba. It is a tree of life. It is he. The Hebrew word he is hey, which is 5, plus yud, which is 10, plus aleph, which is 1. 5, 10, 1 is 16. So it is a tree of life. 16 is a life number, not just 18. It's a 16 is the life-giving number. And nobody should make fun of, should mock the minhag of our ancestors, the custom of our ancestors. Now you could imagine, if I'm introducing this to you in your Seder, and I'm saying, you know, up until now we had 4 cups of wine, but what I want you to do is stick your finger in the wine and 16 times take out a little bit. You could see why someone might say, I'm not sure I'm going in for that. That seems a little bit strange. You know, you German pietists are really out there with your counting. So they seem to be aware of that. And we're saying, don't make fun of this custom. But we see the earliest version of this custom is a way in which we are offering some protection for ourselves. Actually, it has nothing to do with the Egyptians, except for the fact that they happen to be the victims of the plagues, but we are sort of imagining the plagues themselves as having a harmful and continuing element, and we need to protect ourselves against them. And so we're going to, by using the number 16 and by taking wine out of this cup of joy or cup of salvation, we're going to reduce the possibility that we ourselves might get injured in this night, in this Leil Shimuri, in this night of protection. So that is the original understanding, at least according to the German Pietist school, of the way in which we would use the drops, and it was about protecting us. Now, this custom gets quoted in a few other sources that are more well known than this drusha that was only discovered or printed in 2006 from the German Pietists. You have the Minhagim of the Ma'aril, so now you're in the 15th century in Germany still, and the Ma'aril says that, sort of repeats this tradition, attributes it to the Rokeach, and says, it seems to me the reason to do this is to say, from all these save us and bring them on our enemies, for these cups are for the success of Israel. This is the opposite of the way that we experience this. It's not about, we're reducing our joy because the Egyptians had to suffer, but it was actually, it should be on them and not on us. And it's a way of, in some ways, physically instantiating, I'm connecting to these plagues, but I'm hoping that they don't hit me. Okay, and this actually gets encoded in the core book of Jewish law in the Shulchan Aruch, in the bottom of this page. It's a custom to throw a little bit from the cup with one's finger. Okay, so this is how the custom sort of originally develops. As you can imagine, I didn't bring this to you, although it's in Menachem Kasher's Haggadah Shleima. There's a big debate about whether or not you should use your finger or you should spill it out itself halachically, because the finger seems to be, as we'll see, an important part of acting this out. It was the Etzba Elohim. It was the finger of God that brought the plagues, according to Exodus. But sticking your finger in the wine might ruin your cup of wine for any sort of sanitary or other reasons. And so there was a sort of alternative version. You're going to just pour it out, even though you're not going to use your finger. I left that aside here. Okay. So now, also, we're talking about which finger should you use. There's a Midrashic tradition that the finger, what was the finger, Etzba Elohim, that which finger did God use? The Kmitza, which I think is the ring finger. And so it's not just any finger you can use to take it out. It's actually you are somehow embodying the experience of God using God's finger to strike plagues. That's what you're doing to reenact in some ways. That's Kafa Chaim, is 19th century in Turkey. And Darkei Moshe, this is the commentary of Moshe Isserles on the Torah, on the one of the major codes of Jewish law. So he actually says that this is the sword of God, which is called Yuhach. Hach is to hit, to strike, and Yud Vav, which is part of God's name, is, if you count it in Gematria, Yud is 10, Vav is 6, 16. So this is the 16-sided sword of God, which is actually an angel, according to Moshe Isserles, that is appointed to take revenge. And this is a tradition known among the Kabbalists. Okay, so this is, again, just more about, this is a protection against the damaging elements of God out there. Now, where does this idea of the sword of God come from? Comes from a strange verse in Ezekiel chapter 21, and that gets read in the Midrash as follows. Rabbi Isaac ben Tradion, or maybe Marion in some manuscripts, said, the sword of the Holy One, Charbosh al Kodesh Baruch Hu, yesh la sheish esrei piyot. It has 16 sides, piyot. As it says in Ezekiel 21:21, turn yourself backwards. This is a manuscript question. Hit achdi or hit achri. Turn yourself backwards, to the right, forward, and to the left. And wherever you face the blade, your blade, panecha, has been assigned. And if you look at the verse in Ezekiel 21 here, I'm moving my cursor on it, you can see to the hit achri or hit achdi, but let's say hit achri, to the back, to the right, hemani, hesimi, hesmoli, forward and to the left, ana panecha mu'adot. There are some texts of this that don't say ana, but they say ayeh. Ayeh is also 16. So you have four different directions. Each of the directions has four spinning sides. Add it all up, it's 16, and also you have the number 16 in the verse. This is the sword of God that brings punishment. If you look in chapter 21 of Ezekiel, actually it is talking about God's sword there, so it's not a far-fetched midrash. So this is the vision of God's sword, God's punishing sword. And just to note that if God's punishing sword has 16 sides, then midah tovah, God's attributes of goodness, which are mirubeh, which are greater, how much the more so? So even though God has 16 aspects of punishment, God's goodness is actually so much more than this, and that is going to, you know, sort of beat out, God's mercy is going to beat out God's punishing side. All this is just developing the 16 drops that come out of the cup as 16 as really the operating number and the way in which it protects us. Okay, so what, one other connection, you may know this from Havdalah, there's a tradition in Havdalah to pour out the wine, like, I don't know how you do Havdalah in your family, in our family there's always a fight, which kid is going to blow out the candle? And whichever kid manages to blow out the candle, then you dip the candle in the wine that's poured out, right? You sort of pour it onto a tray. This is an old custom of pouring out the wine of Havdalah also as a prophylactic, as a protection. This is from Joshua Trachtenberg, Jewish Magic and Superstition, a classic work published in the 30s, says there's a late custom which arose in German Jewish circles to pour out a drop of wine at the mention of each of the 10 plagues, possibly to placate evil spirits, which may be impelled by the reference to so many disasters to visit some upon the celebrants. That's his summary of what the original version of our Seder is. And then he brings up a source from the 15th century that connected this to Havdalah. A biographer of Israel Isserlin said, I remember that my rabbi, Rabbi Isserlin, said in the name of the great Rabbi Ozer, we don't know who that is, if I had all the wine that they would spill on the ground in Austria for Havdalah, I could drink all year long. Meaning, people are pouring out so much wine at the end of Havdalah, also for prophylactic purposes, that it's really a waste that I could drink it all up. And Trachtenberg says this is also a prophylactic move. So there's some connection about spilling wine, which we might recognize from Havdalah, and spilling wine at the Seder as some way that I'm going to protect protect myself. Okay, so Zvi Roen goes through, where does this start from the modern period to become what we're more familiar with, which is what's the way in which we are doing this because we feel bad about the Egyptians and the suffering that they had. And as we'll see, there is a Midrashic tradition where we do feel bad about the Egyptians and their suffering, which is connected to the question of how come on Pesach we don't say full Hallel. The parallel to Pesach as a long holiday is Sukkot. On Sukkot, we do say the full Hallel every day, but on Pesach, we only say the full Hallel on the first day, or in outside of Land of Israel, the first 2 days, but the rest of Hallel we only do is Bidilug, a reduced Hallel. That's the same Hallel we do in Rosh Chodesh. It's not really a required Hallel. So why do we do it reduced? We'll see there's a Midrashic tradition because we don't want to sing because the Egyptians were suffering. So it's, I don't want to take that away from our, you know, sensibilities here. There is an aspect of Jewish tradition that is concerned about the suffering of the Egyptians. It just didn't connect it to the wine and the mention of the plagues until really the late 19th century, as we're going to see in a moment. But just to note, even in the 20th century, there were some Haggadot that were really talking about this, not in the realm of we do the wine spilling because we're concerned about the suffering of the Egyptians. J.D. Eisenstein was a prolific writer and recorder of customs about 100 years ago, and he, writing about the customs of the Seder, says, this custom is similar to when one hears about sickness or plague, that one spits from one's mouth, toot, 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 right? You hear something bad and you spit, you reduce something, some of your life force, as if to say, don't hurt us, heaven forbid, okay? Again, the prophylactic, so this explanation of the prophylactic spilling of the wine already makes it up until about 100 years ago. And it's also a sign through these that the plagues, that the Egyptians were diminished. No love for the Egyptians there. They were simply just reduced. Okay. And there's even some explanations that the 16 drops that we have is related to an explanation of the 4 cups of wine. We think of the 4 cups of wine. Why are there 4? Well, it's related to the language of redemption, the 4 ways in which God says, I'm going to redeem you from the land of Egypt. But there's another explanation in the Yerushalmi, which is the 4 cups of wine are related to the 4 cups of punishment that God will pour out on the nations. And the Gra, the Gaon of Vilna, connects these 4 cups of wine to the custom of spilling the wine itself. That is to say, maybe what you're doing is a little bit enacting the pouring out of the wine that's going to pour out against our enemies. So again, you have a prophylactic side. This is meant to protect us, toot, toot, toot. And then there's the, this is something that should hit our enemies and not us. And that also even extends into the late 19th and early 20th century. you see other versions of this going forward. Got it published in 1937, not a moment when Jews were particularly excited about being merciful and thinking great about the people who were oppressing them. You know, that these drops are like the drops from the cup of poison that God in the future will spill on all those who are causing suffering for Israel. This is Reuven Margoliot, published in 1937, who connects this again, like the Gaon of Vilna did, to this tradition of the four cups being cups of punishment. He does this even as late as 1937. So where do we get this idea of it's related to the Egyptians? So Tzvi Rohn finds this, and I took this from the Hebrew books and just copied it down, took this tradition from a fellow named Yirmiyahu Lau, who dies in 1874. So you're talking mid-19th century, gave a positive explanation of why one spills a little on the night of Pesach from the cup of salvation for each plague. It's true that there was great joy for us when God took us out of the hands of Egypt and redeemed us, but there was also trouble for us because others were lost. Okay, this is the familiar explanation. And if God could have saved us without death and destruction to others, it would have been more joyous for us. Therefore, because of this, we reduce our joy to show that Israel is merciful, children of merciful, Rachmanim b'nei Rachmanim, we pour out for each plague. So the first mention, according to Tzvi Rohn, the first mention of this idea of we feel bad, we're merciful, it would have been even better if our enemies hadn't suffered and we had gotten out without them suffering, that doesn't show up until the mid or late 19th century. But again, this is, he shows through all the Haggadot, it doesn't matter what denomination you're in, and basically they take this and run with it. This is the only explanation offered in most Haggadot about why we spill the wine. It's only as a way of protecting, of expressing our sadness that the Egyptians had to suffer in order for us to be redeemed. But again, that even though that's a late idea as connected to the spilling of the wine, that concept does show up in earlier Midrashim. And I wanted to show you that just with the idea of the Hallel. Now the standard explanation about why we don't say a full Hallel on Pesach versus Sukkot in the Talmud, in the Babylonian Talmud, is simply about the sacrifices. In Sukkot, every day you have a different number of sacrifices. They go from 13 down to 8, and so which adds up, if you do the math, to 70 bulls that you sacrifice through the 7 days of Sukkot. And so because each day is different, you say full Hallel, says the Babylonian Talmud. On Pesach, because the sacrifices are all the same, you don't change the Hallel, you don't recite the Hallel. And actually, in the early text, you didn't recite Hallel at all, except for the first day of Pesach. But this, later on in a later Midrashic tradition, it's not exactly clear how old this tradition is, but it appears in Psikta D'Rav Kana, which is an old collection, but it appears, seems to be a late addition to that Midrash, says that actually the reason why we do the reduced Hallel is because, in the middle of the page, another explanation, why isn't Simcha? Simcha is written three times in Sukkot, b'samachta, you will rejoice on your holiday, but on Pesach it's not written at all. So the Midrash says, why isn't it written with Pesach? Because the Egyptians died on Pesach. And thus you find, with the 7 days of Sukkot, we read Hallel, but on Pesach we don't read Hallel, except on the first day and its preceding night. Why? As Shmuel HaKatan said in Pirkei Avot, do not rejoice in the downfall of your enemies. Okay, again, this is the familiar explanation, but here it's applied to the issue of Hallel, why we don't say the full Hallel, as opposed to the one that we say, the one that we normally associate with this, which is the spilling of the wine. Okay, so an idea that's connected to Hallel, we don't say full Hallel on Pesach because the Egyptians had to suffer, gets transferred only about 150 years ago to the wine, the spilling of the wine, even though originally spilling of the wine was some way of protecting us from the punishing vengefulness of God's sword or other things that emphasize our life and aspects of that. And I'm going to end with this letter that Haman says to the Jewish to the people out in the kingdom of Ahasuerush, explaining why the Jews are so terrible. Okay, come and see from that poor suffering Pharaoh what they did when they went down to Egypt. Pharaoh welcomed them with grace and settled them in the best of the land and fed them during the years of famine and fed them all the good of his land. Now, they did have a good choice place to settle in Egypt. He had palaces to build and they built them, but he wasn't able to best them. Now they sort of skip over the part where we get enslaved. You know, there were some palaces that needed to be built. And so they built them, however that happened. And then they came to him in trickery saying, we have to go sacrifice to our Lord 3 days in the desert. And after that, we're going to come back, right? That's the original gambit of Moshe, who says, we'll just be gone for 3 days. This actually is in the Torah. We'll be gone for 3 days. Presumably, we'll be back after that. And then they say, please lend us silver, gold, and clothing. Just lend it to us. We're not taking it. Lend it to us. They borrowed their silver, gold, and good clothing and many donkeys as well until they had emptied out Egypt by Natsluit Mitzrayim. They ran away. They weren't coming back. And when Pharaoh heard that they had run away, he went after them to reclaim his money, totally reasonably. Pharaoh's just running to go get the money that they had stolen from him, okay? What did the Israelites do to Pharaoh? They had one man, his name was Moshe, son of Amram, no mention of God. He stretched out his staff in sorcery, said an incantation, don't know what that guy was doing, he had some magical powers, smote the sea until it was bested. They crossed, entered the dry land, and they all crossed. When Pharaoh saw this, he went in after them to get his money. He was just going to get his money. And I don't know how they pushed him into the sea, and he and his whole army sank. And they didn't remember the good that Pharaoh had done for them. This is sort of the inverse of Diana that we had yesterday. They don't remember the goodness that God gave to them. Here in Haman's telling of this, in a Midrash in Esther Rabbah, they don't remember all the goodness that Pharaoh had given to them in their stay in Egypt. So I wanted to bring this as sort of different understandings of our relationship to the Egyptians. One is, do we really, you know, worry about their suffering? Well, yes, that is a Midrashic tradition, not as associated with the wine as we might have imagined. And also, there is this inverse where if Pharaoh was telling the story through the mouth of Haman, how would he have told the story that would have been different from our telling of the story? And in what way does perspective make all the difference?